The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You are listening to the Motherhood Unstressed podcast, and I'm your host, Liz Carlisle. And I'm particularly impressed that you're tuning into this episode because it is a topic that is pretty heavy and dark. We are talking about child sex trafficking and an amazing organization, Operation Underground Railroad, who is doing amazing work in the world, internationally and here at home. And it was started by a man named Tim Ballard, and he worked for the government essentially doing the same thing, seeking out traffickers and eradicating them where he found them. And he decided that he needed to take it up a level and start a nonprofit to support these law enforcement agencies all over the world. And so that's what he's been doing. And they've had over 3,000 rescues, and they've put nearly 1,600 perpetrators in prison for crimes against children. And I wanted to do a show like this because when I came across the work, I just realized how ubiquitous it was. And I wanted to be a light bearer and to spread light, to spread awareness, and to empower you, the listener, to know what to look for in your own communities, because it is happening in every single community in the world. And so I think by sharing the knowledge here, I'm speaking with Johnny Dix. She's the director of outreach. She gives incredible tools on things to look for in your own community, tools to educate yourself. They have a free training on their website, so you can go and take that training so that you know what to look for, and that you can protect your own children from trafficking. Because a lot of times in the U.S., it's not like people are being kidnapped. They're actually being trafficked, and then they go home at night. And so to understand what's really going on, to understand the dynamics, you not only protect children that you don't know, you can be in a position to protect your own children. And so this episode really fired me up. I want it to fire you up as well. If it does, please share it with at least one friend. Get the word out. Get the message out. Don't be afraid to talk about ugly stuff, because when you talk about it and you know about it, you can actually fight it and stop it. And so that's my mission here today, and I hope that it becomes yours as well. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I am so excited you're here, so excited to talk about this incredible organization, what you're doing in the world. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So jumping right in, talk to us about the genesis of Operation Underground Railroad. When did it start? How did it start? Give us the origin story.
Yeah. So our founder, Timothy Ballard, used to work for Homeland Security in the Sex Crime Task Force, and basically doing kind of similar to what we do as a nonprofit. And that was in December of 2013. And through his work, he realized that there was more that could be done to support what's already being done through law enforcement and government agencies by leaving and starting a nonprofit that heavily supports them in rescuing children that are being trafficked. So he had the courage right before his pension was about to, you know, he was about to receive a pension, and there were so many risks that he took, but he just knew it was so important, and he gathered some of his closest friends at the time and said, we need to do this. And I, like, crazily and surprisingly started what is now known as Operation Underground Railroad. And what we do is we heavily support law enforcement and government agencies and finding children that are being trafficked and then putting them on a path to recovery through aftercare, through well-vetted aftercare facilities that our aftercare directors goes in and vets and supports.
Well, I would imagine, too, it's kind of a tricky relationship to build, you know, with law enforcement, with government agencies. How does a nonprofit massage those relationships so that you truly are working together and no one's stepping on anyone else's toes or interfering with their investigation? How does that even work?
Right. I think a lot of it comes through trust, and building relationships, letting them know that we're truly here not to take over what they're already doing. We already understand the limitations that are placed on them as an agency, whether that's funding or resources or whatever. We understand, especially those that work in operations understand those limitations, and we're here to just, not just, but to support them in what they're already doing. We're not here to take over. We understand our role. We understand our purpose, and we want to make sure that we allow them to continue doing what they do so well, and we do that, you know, through support. I think that's the best way, where we're not stepping on toes, is everybody understands their roles, and through relationships, we create that collaboration.
So what would be an example of the support that your organization gives? What do you do, like, specifically?
Specifically, yeah. So we don't go into detail on it specifically what we do, just because of the high sensitivity of how we support, but I can tell you in general terms. So how we would, what it might look like is we are invited in. We never want to impose. We never want to throw our agenda on anybody. We don't have an agenda. We want to be invited in. So if a local law enforcement who is dedicated to fighting human trafficking but has a bandwidth issue or maybe a resource issue or a funding issue, our director of operations sits down with them and says, what are your holes? What can we do to support? So for some, it literally may be, we just don't have the funding to fight this. And maybe they need more manpower. And so maybe we help them provide manpower or funding for something specific. Another is through training. Maybe they're saying, we know this is a problem in our area, but we don't know enough about it. Human trafficking is something that's been talked about, but not really. It's something that is finally, a light is being shed on it. And so a lot of agencies are like, we know it's here, but we don't know what to look for or what to do. And so we come in and we'll provide training for them specifically for their area, that will help them, feel empowered to combat this in their own, you know, their own area. It could look like specific equipment. Maybe they have the resources as far as manpower, but they don't have the equipment to tackle this in the best way possible. So we could do that through a great example is we have labs, mobile forensic labs that, that through awesome donors, we're able to provide for a law enforcement agency. Another is we've done canine dogs that go in and sniff microchips or things where maybe child pornography is placed on them, and providing those resource dogs for them. So there's a variety of ways, and those are very general terms, but a variety of ways that we can support law enforcement and government agencies to fight this.
That's amazing. And I take from just doing the research I did for this episode is you guys are all over the world. I mean, you're tackling this on every continent, it seems like. Is there one area of the world that you're spending more time in? Is there one area of the world that needs help the most, or is it just everywhere?
You know what? Human trafficking literally is everywhere. In every neighborhood and every city. Obviously, we want to be as many places as we can be. We're in 24 countries and I believe 24 domestic states right now, and want to continue to expand. It's everywhere. It really is everywhere. There are areas that may be more highly concentrated. Southeast Asia is a really good example, and we spend a lot of time there. But it honestly is a global epidemic or a pandemic, it would be considered. It's everywhere, and we want to be everywhere. Obviously, there's bandwidth for us as well, but that's our goal, is to be wherever we're needed to be in order to fight it.
Yeah. And I like, I mean, I'm broadcasting from Atlanta. Obviously, Atlanta is a hotbed of trafficking and slavery. A lot of people come through the Atlanta airport and then are, you know, put other into other states. For the listener, is there something that we can look for just in our own communities that would give us a tip off that something's not right? This could be an issue, because from what it sounds like, it's everywhere, and people are just going about their daily business with no clue that this is even happening. So what can someone look for?
Yeah, you know, I remember when I was first introduced to human trafficking, I had been working at a rape crisis and domestic violence shelter, and someone introduced it to me and I didn't know what it was. And I feel really bad now because I realized some of those people that we had worked with were being trafficked and I just didn't even know what that term meant. And so one of the best things that anybody can do is to take just a very basic human trafficking training. It's to look and to identify that it is happening everywhere and that traffickers target vulnerable populations. So thinking about what that looks like. One of the best advices that I was given when I first started to come to understand human trafficking was to trust your gut. If you see a situation where you are looking at a relationship, maybe between someone of superiority and maybe a teen that just kind of feels off, trust your gut, report it. There's numerous things. And the hard thing about human trafficking, which is your question was, what's something that could tip us off? Is it may look like, you know, an abusive situation or another type of situation. And so you really have to pull as much information as you can together to determine what you're watching and what you're seeing. Domestic minor sex trafficking, I would say, is probably the most common type of trafficking that we have here in America. So understanding what that looks like, that's kids being groomed by somebody, a trafficker or a pimp, that their interest is to coerce or force or fraud them into performing commercial sex acts. That is the most common type of trafficking that we see in America. And how does that look? It literally could look like a teenager sitting at a park who's lonely and whose family is going through a situation that's hard and she feels lonely, and someone comes up to her and becomes and starts to really understand her and groom her and wants to be her friend and wants to get to know her. And he's going to make her feel like $1 million and he's going to provide her with things and he's going to be her, prince and, you know, or make her feel whole or complete again. And she finally feels that she's wanted and loved and that hole is being filled. And then all of a sudden he says, but you're going to have to do this for me. And then she's caught in this situation of slavery, really. Mm-hmm. Teaching our youth and looking for vulnerable youth that may be prey to a trafficker. They know what they're doing. They understand. I would say that's the most common type that happens here. It's not the kidnapping, though that does happen. It's not the most common type. The most common type is a boyfriend figure or a superior figure taking control and advantage of a vulnerable individual, whether that's a youth or an adult.
Right. And so I like that you mentioned it was usually vulnerable populations. That could mean, you know, immigrants, is that what you're saying? Or just poverty?
It could mean immigrants. It could mean those in poverty or uneducated. It could mean those that are lonely, like teens that, like I said, people that are lonely and looking for something. It could mean the LGBTQ community. It could mean those that are at risk of so many variety of things. So think about, I think the most... at least in my personal experience, I think the most common type is somebody that is missing something, which isn't that kind of a scary phrase, because we're all missing something and somebody else comes in and tries to fill it. And through, you know, grooming techniques, then gets to the point where they're in control of that person. Really, it can happen to any age, ethnic background, socioeconomic status. But it's, a broken family is an individual that is needing somebody, right? And so that would put somebody in a vulnerable state. And that's why I think human trafficking can be frightening, because I think we're all broken in some way. And unless we're teaching and educating people, especially our youth and our kids, what to look for, they may not even understand that they're being trapped in this. It could be a friend at school that is involved in trafficking and pulls them in. So
Yeah. And I would think too, with technology and social media, it's a lot easier for things like this to happen. Even if, you know, someone is not in a room with someone else, they could be using images from a younger person. Does your organization consider that type of thing trafficking as well?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
But
yeah,
talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I think one of the best things we can do today is helping everyone understand internet safety. There are so many situations, you'll hear it on the news all the time, where someone meets someone online and then they go find them and then all of a sudden they go missing, right? The thing that's so interesting is that when you initially go missing, they don't necessarily identify you as a human trafficking victim, but they identify you as a missing person. But studies show that, especially like a runaway youth, within 48 hours, they're approached by a trafficker.
Wow.
Like, these people know what they're looking for. They understand. I mean, you've seen the huge crisis of, child exploitation online, where somebody threatens them. If you don't do this for me, provide a picture for me, then X, Y, and Z is going to happen. And then we have that whole situation, mm-hmm. Where kids are being exploited that way. And so those are all things that traffickers and groomers understand that lead to something bigger, that lead to this horrific modern day slavery, right? Where these people don't feel like they're in control of their lives and they're being threatened, for the purposes of whatever the trafficker wants them for. So internet safety is crucial. Like, social media, parents understanding the dangers of it and understanding the risk. There, you know, I think one of our articles on our blog, Tim Ballard basically says, you hand your child a smartphone, you're handing them a perpetrator. Mm. And unless you're teaching them how to use the tool responsibly, and if they're not mature or ready enough to use the tool responsibly, they really shouldn't have it. It's like, I think he said, it's like sending them out to a street of brothels, mm-hmm. and saying, you know, good luck. And if we haven't empowered everybody, I mean, if we're not empowered, we could be caught in a trap that could be very dangerous for us.
Right. And that's why, like, having this show was so important to me, to educate the listener, which, you know, for the most part are women and mothers who, you know, want to do the best for their children, but they might not even have the awareness or the wherewithal to say, like, oh, I didn't even know that this was a possibility. You know, I need to be more on the ball, and this is actually happening in my town, most likely. So that's, yeah. I'm just so glad that you're here to talk about that. But talk about some of the success stories of Operation Underground Railroad. I don't want this to be all doom and gloom. I just want to, you know, educate and empower the listener, but also, you know, let's inspire a little bit too. What's some of the good stuff you guys have accomplished?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and it is so true that trafficking is so dark, and it is such a dark place to sit in. But the best way we can expel that darkness is by spreading light, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as soon as light comes into a room, darkness is asked to vanish, like it's told to vanish. And so with OUR, that is our whole purpose, is to shine that light on the global epidemic of human trafficking. And through the years of being in an organization, we've just recently had our 3,000th rescue. We're up to 3,097 rescues. Now, that number is just a number, but when you think of that as a child, as a person, that is a huge number that has allowed a child their freedom and their safety and their security back. So that is something that can be celebrated. And imagine, it's just not that one person that you're rescuing. Imagine rescuing one child. The effect that has on generations to come, and also their family or people that know them as well. So that's something huge to be celebrated. And that comes from shining the light. That comes from everybody that's taking a stand against trafficking. That, as an organization, it came from all of our supporters and donors and people that are talking and educating themselves about it. The other thing is, I think we've had about 1,600 perpetrators behind arrests that have happened behind bars. Now, and the number of victims for one perpetrator, I can't remember the exact number, but it's astronomical.
Yeah,
that they hurt and harm. So getting one person behind bars isn't just one arrest. That's
mm-hmm.
100 to 200 children that are going to be saved from exploitation. And so that's another thing to be celebrated, is that these people that are harming children and harming our youth and even adults are being put away, so they can't do that anymore. And that, again, comes from those collaborations with law enforcement and government agencies, because we can't do that. We don't have the jurisdiction to do that, but we have the support to do that. And that's another thing to be celebrated. And again, when you just think of that the child as an individual, I think that's our biggest thing we can celebrate, is their the gift of freedom. I can't think of anything greater.
Yeah. And I think that it's crucial too, that you do that out processing as well with vetted organizations who are helping them transition back and heal and process what they've been through. Cause I mean, you talk about PTSD. I mean, they must be suffering from that.
I can't, honestly. I mean, I can't even imagine the healing process that needs to take place after being trafficked. I mean, I've sat with numerous individuals that have had just horrific situations happen to them, and the healing process is long and it's hard and it's difficult, but it can begin and through those well vetted aftercare facilities, these kids are able to actually look for a future. Cause you can imagine hope is no longer there after you're being abused continually. That hope leaves, and imagine their thought process of what humankind is like. But through loving and kind and generous people that run these aftercare facilities, that light of hope is ignited. And then they start believing in themselves again. And then they start realizing, I can make my own future. And so that aftercare process is absolutely essential for them and for all of us. It's crucial to get them back on the road to recovery, which, as you said, is probably so difficult and so hard, but our aftercare director does a really good job at making those kids feel loved and valued and important and their true identity, who they really are.
That's amazing. I love it. So if there were one great takeaway that you would want to leave the listener with today, what would that be?
I think the biggest takeaway that I have for people is that we all have a moral responsibility to do something about fighting human trafficking, because it affects everybody. And that can look like so many different things. There's so many wonderful, great causes out there that I'm not pulling from any of them, because we're all needed in all of those things. But we can all do something in our own sphere of influence and in our own power and ability, whether that's just becoming educated ourselves, right? Like learning, like we have a training online that takes an hour. Just take the online training, learn about what it looks like and what you can do if you find out about it or you see it. Another thing, if you feel compelled to do, donate towards causes like Operation Underground Railroad that actually are in the trenches fighting for these children. 40% of our rescue operations are funded by people that give $5 or more a month. And we call those our abolitionist club. I recently saw the movie Harriet that came out, and I just want to say, like, there's a scene where you walk in, Harriet Tubman walks in, and there's a circle of men and women and people of all ages and colors and different socioeconomic status. And they're there and they're like, this is the Underground Railroad. And I can't imagine, at the time, they probably didn't think they were doing anything significant, but these people were saving lives. And I just hope that so many of us are sitting in that circle in our own way, right? In our own ability and power. So educating ourselves, donating if that's what you feel inspired to do. Raising awareness, something as simple as sharing our content online might spark somebody that may have a family or a friend or someone that they know that is that might be facing this. Sharing our content. Another thing would just be not being afraid to talk about it, not being afraid to have those difficult conversations, especially with those that you love. Talk about the risks and the dangers. It is a dark topic. Nobody wants to sit in darkness, but as you talk about it, you are empowering others and yourself. You don't have to live in fear. when you're talking about it. A really great way that we have coming up is the National Day of Giving on Giving Tuesday, December 3rd. We have an incredible item, and I can't tell you what it is, but an incredible item that's coming out that I'm really excited about. That's a great way that you can support OUR by purchasing that item. It's only available for 24 hours, and I'm so excited to see it and to receive it. And it's going to be something so special, and it shares stories of those anyways, I can't say much more, but
it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome, but that would be a really great way. But digging deep inside yourself to determine what can I do? Because everyone can do something. Everyone, little kids, we have little kids do fundraisers and awareness events mm-hmm. for us all the time. Everybody can do something, but it comes down to you asking yourself, what is my role in this? Where do I stand? What can I do? Are you going to be one among the abolitionists that are, you know, fighting for the freedom of other people? What can they do?
Wow. This was such an incredible conversation. Before we, you know, round it out, how can everyone find your organization, contact you, take the online training? Tell us all the things.
Yeah. So our website is www.ourrescue.org. On there, there's a place that says join the fight. And like I said, there's a numerous list of all sorts of ways that people can get involved. Starting campaigns, the live training is the training right there. Online training is on that Join the Fight. You can follow us on every type of social platform. It's at OUR. I think it's at OUR Rescue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At OUR Rescue. You can find us on all different various forms of social media. But yeah, that Join the Fight section is going to be a great place to start.
I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you for the work that you are doing individually and as a whole through this organization. I literally had chills throughout the whole interview because I fully believe and want to help in my own way. And the listener I know feels the same way. So thank you for sharing your light, and thank you for spreading the light in the world with the work that you do.
Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to the Motherhood Unstressed podcast, and I'm your host, Liz Carlisle. If you found any kind of value out of this conversation today, please share us on your Instagram stories, tag us at Motherhood Unstressed, and hit those 5 stars. It literally takes 5 seconds to do that, and you will feel so good for giving back to the show if we have given anything to you. Have a great week. Love you guys.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.